Creek Coffee Podcast, episode 11. At the end of our last episode, I said we were going to talk about coffee sourcing this time, including direct trade and using importers. But for the sake of not going too long and doing justice to both of those parts, we're actually going to split that into two episodes. Today we're going to talk about direct trade, and then 2 weeks from now we're going to talk about using importers to source your green coffee. So I think it is important for people that don't live in the specialty coffee world every day just to start out with a definition for direct trade. So let's just do that. Christian, please provide us with a definition of direct trade.
Direct trade is probably the simplest way to buy something. It means that there is someone, a coffee grower, who grows coffee, and we, a coffee roaster, wants to buy that. We go directly to the grower, negotiate a price, negotiate quality, we buy the coffee, we give them money, they give us coffee. Very basic transaction.
And how would that contrast then with using an importer?
So what happens when you use an importer, it's kind of like buying a tomato directly from a tomato farmer versus buying a tomato at a grocery store. You have different kinds of grocery stores, and you can have different kinds of qualities. You can get organic, you can get really high-end produce, you can get just run-of-the-mill produce. A lot of the importers will have a lot of different qualities available, and you go to an importer and say, hey, what's on your list, or what do you have in your store? And you have only that to work from. You don't really get to develop a direct relationship with someone at origin, but it's a lot easier to go and get your coffee that way.
I really want to focus on sort of why this matters to the customer. And I think initially, just the whole idea is very appealing. You see a lot of popularity in farm-to-table initiatives, transparency around farms and how food is raised from dairy to wheat and all that. Being able to explain to somebody why the product is better, why it's better for them is pretty important in today's food industry. Christian, why else do you think direct trade matters to the customer?
The biggest thing we talk about in our coffee team and why we like direct trade is because we can control quality a lot better. We know exactly what we're getting. We can negotiate when we go down, and I can say, hey, let's do a wash process on this. Let's leave it out in the patios for this many days. You know, I could be wrong, but that's what we'll get. We'll get exactly what I want. But we can really negotiate and find the coffees that we really want to do. We can also make sure it's sustainable, and I think sustainability is a big part of this conversation in direct trade. And I think we get lost in the sustainability word, what it means, and I've done a couple classes now on sustainability and coffee. And I'll say that sustainability is not a sexy thing to talk about. Because when it comes down to it, you go back to your basic business 101, you learn that coffee farmers just need to make enough money. What they need to do is they need to support their coffee farm for this year and next year and be able to reinvest and pay for everything if they sell their coffee below market price. You know, it's not a good thing for them, and it's not a good thing for us.
Right. You don't want to buy an amazing coffee from a great farm and then put them straight out of business.
That'd make me sad. Yeah. Be one great year and then lots of sad years wondering whatever happened to them.
Yeah. And I think another reason for doing direct trade, you're providing transparency of story to the customer, which shouldn't be undersold. The ability of a story to sell a product. You are able to source a great product and ensure that it stays great from year to year. You're able to build the sustainability of another economy or even just another individual's life. Fourth, I think it's just fun. Like, it is a really fun way to source your coffee. A lot of us are in coffee because it's an interesting product to us. And a lot of what's interesting is how it's grown and what the farmer's doing and how they take care of their plants, how they work with their pickers, how they process their coffee after it's picked, and then, of course, their business itself. To go down there and see farms and work with them and learn about what they're doing and learn about the coffee itself, is very interesting, and you almost feel like you become a part of it.
Yeah, it was certainly like essential in my coffee education, my first time to actually go to Origin. And as a barista, I was just really enamored with the idea of coffee farmers and what that looked like. And I actually had the opportunity to go down early in my coffee career when I was a cafe coach, a cafe manager for Stone Creek. And I just visited when I was on vacation. And my goal, once I became a director of coffee, was to be able to utilize these direct relationships to be able to teach our own baristas here at Stone Creek more transparency, more understanding of how it works. It got to the point where my farm-to-cup class could have been like 4 hours long, and Drew had to step in and say, you got to cut it down a little bit. It's too long here. And I could just go on for hours and hours. But I think it really serves as an empowering tool. If you have someone who's just going to go and hang out and, you know, go surfing to Origin and not want to go out and not want to meet with producers, yeah, sure, it's not going to be of any benefit. But if you have green buyers that are going and capturing knowledge and wanting to share ideas and then, you know, dialoguing with producers, bringing it back and inspiring your own employees and your own customers, it really does help. It adds fuel to the fire, so it were a coffee passion fire, I guess.
Yeah, it's one of the things I actually hear about most in interviews or when I'm talking to our employees about what they want to do with their coffee career. A lot of them want to go see what's going on at Origin, what's going on at the farms we work with, and a lot of them want to get involved in the sourcing game. Unfortunately, there are some downsides, too. And the downsides aren't so much downsides as they are logistical headaches with direct sourcing.
Oh, there are a lot of downsides. And one thing that you'll notice is that small coffee roasters typically don't source for themselves. And that's not because they don't want to. It's because it's really expensive to get started in it. Mm. And you need to be able to pay for the coffee up front. You can't use someone. It's like when you buy a car. Most people can't just go to the dealership and say, here's the car. You know, we're good. Here's the money. Here's
cash
the car.
Cash car.
Exactly. You have to go and you have to lease it and you have to pay it off little by little as you're making the money to pay for it. And that's where an importer kind of works as a nice intermediary because they can take the risk off of the buyer and kind of, you know, take a little bit of cash here and there for the coffee that they're buying and deal it out a little at a time. So you need to be able to pay for the coffee. If something goes wrong in a direct trade relationship or if the quality is bad, it's a total pain in the butt.
Which we've learned a little bit about.
We've learned a little bit about, and unfortunately is one of the first things I had to deal with when I was a green coffee, and when I first came into this green coffee buyer role, wasn't fun, and we almost thought we had to go into this thing called arbitration where you take it to a legal entity to determine whether or not the contract was void or not, and it's not fun. If you buy it from an importer, odds are you can just say, hey, importer, this isn't what I bought. And then they'll be like, oh, okay, you know, we need to clarify it better next time, but we'll replace it and we'll find a home for it. It puts a lot of risk onto the coffee buyer, the coffee company actually doing the direct trade. We think the benefit's worth it, but as Drew said, we've had some instances where you get some stuff and you're like, what is this? Like, we just bought an entire container full of Rio or phenol or ferment. This is no good. And you're stuck with it.
I think another con would be just handling the logistics of getting the coffee here. I mean, if you're buying from an importer, they're going to ship it to you from, you know, Minneapolis or St. Louis or whatever. But if you got to go get it, it's not just, okay, buy it, send it to me. You actually often have to handle getting it to your roaster.
And it's not just as easy as saying, okay, Nat, deliver it over here now. You have to use in-country logistics for any country, and every country is going to be a little bit different. You have to find a shipping line. Then once it gets stateside, you have to worry about customs and brokerage and all these things you never think about until you have to do it the first time. And FDA inspecting your containers and holding it up for 2 weeks because they need to search it for drugs. You know, all this stuff goes down when you're doing direct trade, and we're all kind of familiar with it. Oh, and port strikes, that happens a lot. I know West Coast, East Coast was pretty good this year. West Coast, there was a couple months where things were just sitting on the water, and who knows what happened to the coffee that was sitting out there, too. That's a scary, scary proposition. And then you have to ship it here, and then you have to unload it. We don't have a real dock, so we have to unload everything by hand, slide it into our basement. Not easy to carry 320 or 275, 153-pound bags and stack them up in a basement.
Which is where we are right now. But it works great as a recording studio.
It's perfect as a recording studio.
Except for when the toilet flushes above us or somebody walks on the floorboards, which are a little old and creaky.
We call that ambiance.
It's part of the effect. I think at the end of the day, any headache, though, is worth direct trade for the story. And Christian, you mentioned it you said it was more expensive, but... That I suppose that's not entirely true. It's just that it costs more cash up front to do direct trade. And if you're buying, 100 bags of coffee, it's going to be a little bit harder for you because to fill a shipping container is, 300 bags or so. And if you're only shipping 100 bags, your shipping cost is going to go way up. Depending on what philosophy you want to take in sourcing, direct trade allows you to work with farms and co-ops and negotiate prices and achieve really great quality in your sourcing for a price that's sometimes lower than you get from importers. And
really what you're doing is you're just cutting things out of the middle.
You're cutting out the middleman. Yeah.
You're taking a little more risk, but there's a little more benefit for you if you can do that well. Mm. I'll say that the other side, the farmer, appreciates it. They love to know where their coffee's going. We had the opportunity to have two producers here this year so far. One was the son of a producer, and another was actually the leader of a small micromill in Costa Rica. But they get so excited when they see where their coffee is and understand the other half of the coffee chain. That's something you kind of get working through an importer, and you can kind of see where the coffee's going, but it's not the same. It's not a relationship.
Sure.
You have the relationship with an importer. You don't have a relationship with the roaster, with the farmer.
Yeah, and one of the farms we've been able to work, not farms, but co-ops, actually, in Costa Rica, we've gotten to work with is a co-op called Misepa. And they're in the Chiripo region of Costa Rica. And just kind of a cool story. We've got now a 3-year relationship going on with these guys, and we'll likely work with them for years to come. It's been a neat story of feedback and increase in quality.
Misepa was one of the first coffees that we cupped when we visited Costa Rica the first time, and we were just looking for, like, we were just getting into this direct trade thing. It was my first origin trip. I think it was about 3 or 4 months into the job. We find a lot that's like 100 bags, so it works for us. We buy it. We get it here. It's pretty good. We kind of knew a little bit about the cooperative the first year. We go back, and I'm with Sam Brown, our barista trainer, and we get a chance to actually go visit Misepa. And we see a lot of things that are weird. Like, they're drying coffee in front of the washing beds next to the road, which is not something you see in Costa Rica. You maybe see it in Sumatra. You don't see it in Costa Rica. And the mill is dirty, and it looks like they just have way too much coffee on their patio. And it turns out they didn't quite make adjustments in order to do really high quality that year. They were still learning. When we first met them, they were only 2 or 3 years into doing specialty coffee. But what was amazing is we gave them some feedback, and Francisco, our friend at Exclusive Coffees, worked extensively with the guys at Misepa. I should say men and women, not just guys. There are 7 producers that work in total with that cooperative. And the head of the mill, Jose, kept on pushing and said, we could do okay quality, but we could do great quality. All we have to do is work a little bit harder. We have to push a little bit better. And we went back the next year, and it was totally turned around. Clean mill, investments into mechanical dryers, so they actually had more room, the ability to dry things better. They're experimenting with new processing, and it's the kind of turnaround story you want every single direct trade relationship to be. And it's cool to be on the other side of that, and to see it really, really work out. And I'm sure that that other people will have stories of direct trades that don't work out. And maybe if you check in with us in another 2 years, I can list off a couple stories of direct trades that didn't work with us. But this is just a really inspiring story and a really awesome community.
And 2 weeks ago, we actually had the cool opportunity to have Jose from Misepa in to the Stone Creek Coffee Factory. So not only have we seen his operation and been able to kind of take part in that, he has now been here and gotten to see kind of how his product is taken all the way from farm to cup. And when he was here, we actually had the opportunity to record a little bit with him. He can be a little bit difficult to understand, but just listen closely. He speaks very good English and in person and very, very easy to understand. We got some great content, and we wanted to share it with you. And that's how we're going to wrap up this episode.
We're here with a producer that we work with, Mr. Jose Ureña. I get it right?
Ureña.
Excellent. And he is one of the producers that works with the Misepa Micromill, a coffee that we have come to love. We used a lot this past year in our cold brew. We did a case study with it. And we have a cool opportunity to be here. He's visiting us in Milwaukee today, and we just wanted to chat a little bit just so you get to meet a coffee producer, someone who you may have tasted his coffee before, and just it's a unique opportunity that we have today.
And Jose, we talk a lot on our show about sort of how coffee is produced. So I don't want to ask you too much about like how you produce the coffee. What I'm more curious about is why do you work in coffee and not some other industry in Costa Rica? And I want you to tell me your story about how you got started in coffee.
Well, Costa Rican is a culture of coffee, but we start to make micro mills to try to get balance because we really love the coffee crops. It's our passion, and I really want to see my child and my son and my grandsons working close in the family. So we start to try to get something different so we can get some money and get one stable business for the family through a couple years. Because I think it's important for us to be stable, and if we can make a name like Misepa, it's important that if you get customers for Misepa's coffee, you can have Misepa's coffee through couple years or many years.
Mm-hmm. And I understand from conversation, like, there was a time when it was hard for you to kind of sell your coffee, and you saw, like, it was just kind of going at the coffee market price. And even you, like, 20 years ago, you said you came to the United States to work and make some money to send home. You're in New Jersey, right?
Right. The problem with Pedro Celedon coffee is that most of Costa Rican coffee was producing 4 million of 100 pounds 15 years ago, and now it's producing only 1,700 100 pounds, and because there are a lot coffee not too good with the quality, and that they were mixing all the coffee, so the price was very low, and so many people like me, we have to come to New Jersey to work. And then the guys like us that we have a high quality coffee make micro mills to separate it, and now I believe we can make plant new crops and start to make a little enterprise that be stable through the years. And I can get a good price that let me live still in the business.
How old were you when you started working with coffee?
My parents are not here now. You know, they left with God. But
did they own a coffee farm? Did you grow up with coffee?
Right, but was a little bit coffee, little bit cows, little bit this, little bit this, because was not too good, like to live from coffee, was not enough the money to live. Now we think that we can think about coffee, live about coffee, is our passion. We really like think the whole year about the job or coffee. So sometimes taking the coffee or in the micro mill, or other times planting new crops and taking care about every detail.
What do you like about coffee? What makes coffee special to you?
First thing is the passion. Because when you feel passion for something, you can take care about every detail. When you start to take care about every detail, the results will come by itself.
So do you drink a lot of coffee yourself?
Yeah, enough, I think enough. Couple of fifth or sixth times a day.
Oh, wow. That's probably more than I drink.
So you were telling me a little bit yesterday and how you made the decision to start doing, like, quality, like, specialty coffee, and you were introduced to Exclusive and Francisco. How did that get started again? Or just tell Drew how?
Well, that was by an accident. A couple guys, they were talking a couple example and bring to Mr. Francisco, and they say, "Wow, it is a good quality," and nobody knows from where it comes. So when this coffee comes from Pérez Celedón, from Chiripo area, so Francisco say, "Wow," and so made the boom, the micro mills in Pérez Celedón, because mm-hmm. in that time, thanks to Exclusive Coffee, we can know the quality we have. Every day they cap every lot, so they are giving us all the technical support, and I think it's made important tools in this business. I guess the first piece in this game was Exclusive Coffee, the technical support.
And those of you familiar with Costa Rica coffee, I'm sure all of you are pulling up a map right now. You may have heard of Tarazu, you may have heard of the West Valley. Chiripo is kind of, it's a long drive from San Jose. It's 4 hours, I think, a four-hour drive to San Jose, so it's a long ways away. It's kind of through some, if you go through the, I think it's the number one or the number two, it's like a long drive down. It's always fun to watch, and you're always like, are we going to go off the cliff here? But it's a really developing coffee area. There's some really amazing coffee, and a lot of it's just getting sold as commodity grade, and the specialty coffee that's going into really, like, mediocre regional blends. And it took a little bit of, like, hey, our coffee's better than this. We can sell it for what it's worth, and it's cool to see producers really focusing on quality, even in regions that are not known as much for quality. And I think there are four micromills right around you right now, which is it's encouraging to see, because you don't really. I told someone else who works in coffee, it's like, yeah, we sourced some Chiripo, and they're like, Chiripo, like you go to Chiripo? That's awesome. I didn't know they had coffee down there. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, because in the year 2000, there was 5 micro mills in Costa Rica, and now there is 6 micro mills in just 2 miles around.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In the Chiripo area, and Costa Rica is a small country with just 50,000 kilometers mm-hmm. square, and we have a lot of beach and 7 volcanoes, so it's very steep, the roads. And last year, the World Championship of Espresso Coffee in Rimini, Italy,
mm-hmm.
the winner was a micro mill that Exclusive Coffers work on. And the winner is just around 20 miles from our micro mill. The winner, the guy was last name Navarro. I forgot the name of the micro mill.
Yeah,
but it's a producer with just 22 years old.
Montecopi.
Right.
Yeah.
Montecopi. Montecopi. In the neighborhood is copy of Dota.
Yeah, that's right. We visited with them, and they were...
The barista was a Japanese guy named Hidenori Saki.
Yeah, we got to see a little bit of that. That's a really beautiful farm.
So you mentioned Francisco and Exclusive providing technical support for you. Tell me what that looks like. What is that technical support that they've given to Miss Epa?
Well, first he started to tell us about quality because in the micro mill we cannot get better the quality. We have to get through the micro mill best quality possible, because in the factory we can just keep the quality. We cannot get it better. Mm-hmm. So start to take care of every detail, from all the fertilizer, all the system in the coffee crops, and then he cups every day, every lot. So every lot get into the micro mill, get its label that it says how matters over the sea was produced, and who was the producer, and the amount of this lot, if the process was sun-dried completely or partially, and every day he's capping every lot. So he say, what happened with this? Why this humidity is highest than the right point, or is lower, or whatever. So if you check every day, every lot, you can get a perfect control over the production of the year.
All right. I haven't been to the micro mill. I visited Costa Rica for the first time just this spring, and we met at Exclusive Coffees. But tell me about your work with Eric and Christian, because you've been working together now for, I think, almost 3 years. So tell me about the first time these guys came to see you, and then the work you've done with Stone Creek Coffee.
Well, that was through Exclusive Coffees too. Mm-hmm. Mr. Francisco made the connection and take the guys to Miss Epa. And for us, it's like we feel really proud about, because when you see people from couple places of the world coming to our factory, is like, wow, this is a wonder. We are doing okay, and we are trying that they can find things that they like to see. If they see something wrong, we'll say what happened. So that we make us get better and better and better, and we feel so proud. We really like receive them. They were at the plant two times.
Yeah, I think the first time I had your coffee, we just picked it out from the cupping table, and we liked it. And then the second year, I visited with our barista trainer, Sam, and we visited. And I remember you had picked so much coffee that you were drawing in front of your washing tanks. So you're like, what is all this coffee? Like, where is it? And what's really cool is for me to go back and see, okay, we need to improve. What can we do? Okay, let's we need to move some more volume. And you guys put in one mechanical dryer, and now you put in a second mechanical dryer, so you're able to deal with the volume, and you have more even, better tasting coffees, and you're experimenting with things like a double wash process and different kind of honeys and different kind of varieties. And it's really cool to see someone to go from, hey, we're delivering our coffee to a cooperative, we're getting just a little bit of price for it, a little money, to go to someone who's making really amazing, like really good coffee in just a little bit of time. And it's cool to see where you'll be in 2 years and 3 years and 4 years. It's just exciting for me to see people who care. Like I said, it's that passion that really drives through, and to show that you really, you're interested in doing really amazing coffee, but you also want to make sure that you're doing it right.
Well, I usually think that nobody needs that, people being giving you gifts. Mm-hmm. You need to make friends when sometimes in the life or anything you are falling off. You need a hand close to you that give you a hand so you can be stable. This is the balance we want to make with Stone Creek, because if we get close, they visit us, we visit you, we will be really friends, and I guess we can get a strong relationship for a long time if we get friends first. Stone Creek is amazing to me. I was telling Christian this is too big. I was thinking about a smaller business, and now it's amazing, because I told Christian it's the whole circle. Is from the they are taking care about the coffee from the crops, visiting the poppers like us in Costa Rica, and here roasting the coffee and putting it into the coffee shops, the bakery. So it's amazing to me. I think I don't have suggestion about, because I am really amazing.
Yeah, we like to call everything we do from farm to cup. So the whole spectrum, we work with the farmers, we take it and import it, and then we roast it, and then we put it in the cafes, and then we brew it and give it to the customer. And
I think it's very important, because it's getting the exact balance to keep on in the business, because so many times if some step in the falls off, you know, the whole company falls off. So it's so important to take care about every step in the chain, you know, from the crops until the cup, you know. So keep everybody with a balance, with the quality, with the money, because every part is important in the whole thing.
So there you have a little glimpse into the mind of a producer, and Jose is an amazing guy. We hung out for a couple days. Really, really amazing person. And so that kind of wraps up a little bit about direct trade. Next time we'll be talking about importers and how to work with an importing company if you're a small coffee roaster, if you're a large coffee roaster. Send us your feedback. We would love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions, any ideas, any comments, you can email us at podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com, or look us up on iTunes, the Stone Creek Coffee Podcast. I think if you
search for it there, you'll find it.
Until next time, we are geeks.
And we are talking coffee.
Reverse roles.